that a gram?
New card. What do you think?
Whoa. Very nice. Look at that.
Picked them up from the printers yesterday.
Good coloring.
That's bone. And the lettering is something called Cillian Braille.
It's very cool, Bateman, but that's nothing. Eggshell with Romalian type.
Impressive. Very nice. Let's see Paul Allen's card. Look at that subtle off-white coloring. The tasteful thickness of it. Oh my God. It even has a watermark.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
It is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2005. This would be Newsreel, your daily report as the wog counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny, and Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. Just by listening, you are too. You're doing your part, and let's see if I can get through this news show and do mine. You can all read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. Once you're there, you'll be able to read up on all the news stories and news programs and everything else that I've found in links and other people have sent to me as links. And if you want to send me links, you can do that too, but that's okay because this is all broadcast live out to the internet, and you can pick it up off of a number of other stations who believe in what I do. And they are Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. You can do whatever you like with it. You can burn it to disc. You can hand it out. You can put it on mini disc, because I've never actually seen this show on mini disc. And as we all know, mini discs are, well, I don't know. Is that like a dead medium or what? I mean, I kind of thought they were really cool. If nothing else, mini discs are cool looking. I'll tell you that. I always thought they were kind of neat, but I don't really see too much use for them anymore. Of course, they did come out with that new standard, didn't they? Mini discs were supposed to be coming out on an 8-hour format. That's a piece of media you never hear about anymore. As a matter of fact, I've heard very, very little about mini discs in the news and in the media anywhere. I mean, they came out with the mini discs, just so we all know what we're talking about here. The mini disc was that format that came out, looks like a disc, actually. It's like a mini CD stored inside of a plastic case. And usually they're see-through. They look very cool. You know, they got the little unit there and the little thing that slides over, and you can read them. Now, a new standard came out where apparently you can put 8 hours of audio on one of these mini discs, and as well, a lot of these mini discs can record live, so you can feed right off out of the air. They have mics on them and stuff like that. They're very, very expensive, but it's interesting how there's not much coverage and much news about these things online. You know what I mean? Like, there is if you go look for it, but you never really see anything released or anything on the gadget pages. It's not like anybody's trying to push them. I think it's because somebody wants to get rid of these things because, well, since they basically do everything a tape recorder does except for the fact that it's digital, I could see why there's certain people who wouldn't want us to have this kind of media. I mean, how much easier would it become to do piracy if we had these mini discs around? So maybe that's something we should look at. I don't know, just a thought. Let's get into some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean, Bush didn't declare war, so saying that Canada violated that treaty is not true unless I am mistaken. That whole Constitution thing, nah, we don't need to observe it. And that's from Mobile. Well, I guess I don't know if he did declare war. I think he would declare war. I mean, the headlines all said war. What is declaring the war? Does he have to actually make a declaration of war? I mean, if he goes and invades a country, right, and he declares war on that country, that is a declaration of war. I'm pretty sure he declared war on Iraq. If he didn't declare war on Iraq, well, he did declare war on Iraq. I mean, we're at war in Iraq. I mean, a rose by any other name is still a rose. You know, it seems to me that that's an interesting question, though. I wonder if he actually did declare war. Because if he didn't declare war, well, what the hell is he doing? Is this what they're calling Vietnam? Like, Vietnam was called a police action. You know, isn't that great? A police action. I've never seen the cops drop napalm on people before, but, you know, it's a police action. And when they say it's not a war, even though now the Vietnam War was like the longest-running war in American history, I believe, you know, in the beginning stages, they never even called it a war. So the fact that they're not calling it a war now, or there was maybe no official declaration of war, which I'm pretty sure there was, but let's suppose for a minute that there wasn't an official declaration of war, I think that really belittles the people who've gone over there and fought and died. You know, I think it, well, it kind of dresses it down a bit. I mean, you can call it what you like, but you got guys running around in tanks with automatic weapons killing other people. So, to me, that seems like war. And another one here. Oi, mate! Happy, happy, joy, joy. Guess who I ran across today? Yes, it's the Dark Princess of point-to-point pocket money-robbing Rachel Stevens. Now, to get everyone caught back up, this is a WOG here. This is Druid Wysimaru over there. In the big UK Gattaca selection over there, and he says that he actually ran into Rachel Stevens. Now, Rachel Stevens was that piece of shit who is trying to get all of her fans to buy multiple copies of her singles so she doesn't starve to death. I covered this a couple days ago. And her letter goes on here. She was caterwauling at the back of a castle for this party in the park. She was probably trying to deafen some more innocent children to give her all their pocket money to stop the goddamn singing. Someone called Childline. Yeah. There was a chance... I was there just by chance doing some sword practice sessions with the group I'm with. So I guess this is like a Society of Creative Anachronism, kind of like swordplay group thing. Just picture the sight of six people dressed in medieval costumes, wearing armor, waving swords about, standing on top of a castle battlement right behind and above most of the attending crowd, and then trying to start a chant of, hands off, MP3, hands off, MP3. Well, you may think that this has got... You may think that this has got to be a put-on, but check the web for yourself for the event. It happened, it was quite successful. A lot of crowd joined in the fun, probably thinking it was just a fun chant. This surprised me due to the weird circumstances. There again, maybe it helped it along. Unfortunately, it lasted only about 5 minutes or so, and then the song started and all hell broke loose. Damn teeny bopper screamers. I'd love to know if she got the message. So, Sean, just think. You did get a mail. You did get to make a small difference, even though only one person tries to find out what they were chanting and why they did. That's one more person wise to her own fan base. And hey, at least this time I was only in danger of hearing loss re-Scientology. Sorry, no photos this time around. All the best, Druid Wysimaru. Now that's rad. You know, that's a great story. That's a fantastic story of a WOG going out there and getting involved and actually in a really frontline way. You know, that's really, really cool. And the interesting thing is, of course, the nature of the story that I reported the first time. It's hard to know what to chant. I mean, they don't really try to give you too much of a, well, you know, you can't really oppose them because you don't really know what you're shooting at. We just disagree with the whole thing that she's doing, trying to make people, you know, spend all their last hard-earned dollars on her CDs. Because, I mean, to take that angle, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not wrong to buy a CD. I don't have a problem with that at all. But what I do think is wrong is when you try to exploit your fans in such a way that you're trying to get them to spend all of their money because you claim you're starving to death. Like, that's just evil. Even I haven't played that card. I've played some pretty evil cards in my day. Well, that's totally not true. I don't think I've ever played a really evil card like that. But that's just sick and weird. I can't believe that this woman did that. And, you know, maybe when she's a little bit older, she's going to have to live with the guilt of doing that. And I think that's kind of sad. So let's get into Sort Yourself Out. Hey, Sean, Sort Yourself Out, just so you know, is the advice column of the show. If this happens to be the first show you're listening to, chances of that are nil, but whatever. Every, you know, so often I get questions. People want to know what they can do to make their lives better. So they send it in to me, and I address it in Sort Yourself Out. Hey, Sean, I doubt you have time for this, so you might want to just trash this. But I need someone to rant to, and you're my fucking role model, so I figured you'd be so kind, maybe you'd give me a little direction here. Okay, I'll see what I can do. Anyways, let's just start with last night. It was growing great, and a lot of my buddies had just graduated from college, and I was almost there too, but it's taking me longer because I'm doing co-op right now. Problems started when we decided to go out to a nightclub. Now, Sean, I'm a very friendly drunk. I don't cause problems, and I love to dance like an idiot. Obviously... It's some crime to dance like an idiot, because after an hour of dancing, two bouncers forcefully removed me from the fucking bar. Being WOG-like and not wanting to use my martial arts on them, I decided to let them drag me out and talk to another bouncer about my displeasure at the situation. He was nice enough, but really didn't give a fuck. I think I need to quit drinking, but my life seems pretty boring, because I don't really have any hobbies besides computers and shit. I got the rest of my life going pretty good, but my personal life is just a mess. I was wondering if you have some advice on how to meet new people and how not to be such a damn alcoholic. Thanks, Sean. And I'm going to hold back the name there. Generally, when it comes to meeting people and what's going on in your life here. Now, being as I have done the bouncer role, the way this works is somebody complains somewhere, some manager makes a call, and you're gone. You know, this is not negotiable. There's no talking. It's just you're out of there. Now, me personally, I avoid shooting galleries. I try to avoid bars, churches, and crack houses. Generally, any place where you go to shoot up with anything that makes you feel better is, you know, anything. If you need to drink, you know, you can sit at home and drink. You know, that way you know what you're doing. I mean, you're sitting there, you got like, if you got a 40-pounder of Jack Daniels, you know, and you're drinking a 40 of Jack Daniels, you say, yep, I'm an alcoholic. Here I am drinking my 40 of Jack Daniels, do-do-de-do, right? Now, when you go to the bar and you drink a 40 of Jack Daniels, suddenly it's cool, right? Everybody's like, oh, wow, you know, look how much you can drink. And then, you know, you blew a bunch of money, you spent way too much cash. You know, so if you're looking for a way to get into something that to meet new people, you have to do something. You'd have to get involved with, I don't know, like, if you're into martial arts, maybe, well, a lot of martial arts classes, you know, it's hard to find a good one now. There's a lot of attitude going on. Maybe you should look into something like, I don't know, take yoga. Yoga and martial arts got a lot in common. As a matter of fact, all martial arts come from yoga. A lot of people say, what are you talking about? But if you go further back, Wushu from China is actually founded in Indian practices. So yeah, actually, most of the Qi stuff and all that jazz comes from Indian teachings. That's why it's called Mother India. But anyway, I mean, you could look into something like that. You could look into maybe going to different clubs, like vegetarian cooking, something like that. I don't know. You could just try to take some courses, see what you meet. Life is what is happening while you're making other plans, all right? The number one thing to do is to get out there and do stuff. You have to do stuff. If you don't do anything, well, you're not going to get anywhere, are you? You know? So as to the drinking thing, well, booze is just a substitution. And now this one here is going to get me out. If you need the booze, right, because booze is terribly, terribly bad for you. You know, booze is wicked. And if you think that you just can't relax without having a drink, well, maybe you should look at alternate means. You know, what do you mean? I don't know. Smoke some weed. See what's going on with that. I mean, if I had a choice between getting people to smoke weed and drink alcohol, I would have them smoke weed, oh, any day of the week. As a matter of fact, I know I got cops listening to me right now. Oh, and a big hello to all my law enforcement brethren out there. But I'm sure every cop and every paramedic in the Seven Straits would, a huge majority would agree with me that if you were to do a direct swap where you say, okay, let's just do a flip-flop, booze is now illegal and weed is now legal, you would find a lot less problems. The police force would not nearly be as overtaxed because do you know how many problems they run into on the roads at night? In the really real world now, do you know how many problems they run into that are related to alcohol on a daily level? Do you have any concept of that? I mean, when you think about why is it that the government has no problem with this plant that grows all over North America, yet they seem to be just encouraging people to go out and blow their minds off with these carefully distilled alcoholic beverages, which we know kills people, which we know destroys families, which we know causes violence in the home? Why is it that there's this big problem there? Now, never mind, well, drugs are bad. Okay, we'll skip all that. Okay, let's get past that. Okay, let's just look at it. We'll say, okay, alcohol is bad and pot's bad. Both of them are bad. Well, I'll even give you the benefit of the doubt and say that, okay, let's say that pot weed and, say, alcohol are equally bad. You know, I'll stretch my mind and try to conceive of the fact that, you know, marijuana could be as bad as alcohol. I'll try to fathom that. Even though all the scientific data says that it's not. Even though, you know, it all depends on how you consume it. I'm sure if I, you know, were to stop it in a propane fire and inhale the smoke, yeah, that would technically be worse than, you know, doing the doing a 40 of Jack Daniels. I'll tell you one thing. On my grad night, I drank a 40 of Jack Daniels by myself. I wound up with a blood alcohol level of 3.8. That's a true story. And if it wasn't for Ronan Medic, and that's how he got the name, because he found me in the bush and dragged me out, flipped me over, and I basically was puking, and he saved my life that night. Why? Because me and Jack Daniels had a disagreement. Why? Because I was young and stupid, and I broke up with a girl and decided I was going to get really, really drunk. So me and a 40-pounder of Jack went at it. You know what? It was the dumbest thing I ever did in my life. And to this day, if I even have a shot of Jack Daniels, I will puke my guts all over the floor. I hate Jack Daniels. Horrible stuff. So when you look at it that way, I mean, when you think about that and the fact that I almost died just because of my own ignorance and experimenting with alcohol, people who smoke weed out of ignorance, they either have nothing happen or the worst case scenario, they puke, but they don't die. Nobody's died. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the point. We'll say they're both equal. Wouldn't it make more sense to have weed legal and alcohol illegal, judging by the evidence of what we have seen? Well, obviously it does. Obviously it does. You can't, if you can't see that, if you can't look out there, look at the numbers, look at the facts, it's not much of a difference engine equation to make that call. That's just me. Now, getting back to your advice here, you know, if you generally the bar, there's nothing in the bar, man. It's just other people trying to get away. Now, if you want to go to the bar and have a beer, that's fine. But they get pretty dull and pretty boring. You've been in one bar, you've been in them all. So I would start looking into other interests. What else are you interested in? Are you interested in robotics? Are you interested in reading? Are you interested in book clubs? Shit, there's all kinds of things out there for people to meet people. Take a look around at what's going on in your community. Get involved. I know that sounds like kind of a no-duh thing to say and kind of a no-duh thing to do. But shit, dude, that's where it's at. And stay off the booze. Get off the sauce. That's what I say. There's nothing good in there. All right. Opinion. That's my opinion. I've got no other opinions. Oh, well. Into the news. In Kill the TV News. Now, this is from No Deal. This is very cool. Check this out. Not long ago, Andrew Fanara was shopping with his wife for a new big screen television. Everything was going fine until a sales clerk discovered Mr. Fanara was an energy watchdog for the federal government. Pulling Fanara aside, the clerk confessed his own new 61-inch TV gulped electricity the way a big SUV guzzles gasoline. Now, this is something I never thought about. With all these new big TVs coming out, I guess there's a lot more power being used up, and that power's got to come from somewhere. The month after he got it, he got a call from his landlord who noticed a big jump in the utility bill, recalls Fanara, team leader of the Energy Star program with the U.S. Environment Protection Agency, whatever the fuck they're worth, EPA. It was the kid's big screen television. Revelations about energy-munching appliances aren't uncommon in Fanara's job, but lately, he's hearing more about big-screen TVs, and that's worrisome. With sales expecting to skyrocket, and with the only outmoded testing and efficiency standards available to alert people about energy consumption, digital big-screen TVs are poised to generate big hikes in some home energy use and pollution unless manufacturers act swiftly to adopt more efficient technologies. Now, this is one of those reasons why we need to keep on top of the core political. That's one reason why the EPA officials are scheduling later this month meeting to meet with the officials of the California Energy Commission, utility company Pacific Gas and Electric, and the National Resource Defense Council, NRDC, an environmental group. Their goal? Discuss the best way to measure TV energy use and ways to get manufacturers to adopt energy-saving technologies faster. Well, you know, it's always going to be about the money, and they're going to try to offload everything back to the consumer, of course. The price of these big screen TVs is coming down, so more and more people will soon be able to afford them, says Noah Horowitz, a senior NRDC scientist. If we do nothing, it will lock in power consumption at higher levels. People keep a TV 5 to 15 years, so we nearly need to get started making them as efficient as they can be. Well, I'm here to tell you, you're not going to get 15 years out of one of these new TVs. In fact, most of the plasma screen televisions were only slated to work for 500 hours before planned obsolescence kicked in and they went straight into the shitter. Not very good, but with all technology, you're only going to get 3 to 5 years out of your computer, and I'd be surprised if you'll get 3 years out of them. I mean, doing my tech skills, I'd noticed that, you know, computers generally start to take a giant dump after about the five-year mark. But as the technology is getting faster and the parts are being made more and more cheaply, guess what? Everything's breaking down faster, and that is not cool. So that's one of the reasons why I hate to say it, and I'm going to bite my tongue when I say it, but unfortunately, when it comes to electronics, I seem, because, again, in the job I had to fix electronic stuff. So I got all these different consumer parts and all these new consumer parts coming by me. And the guys who really do make the best hardware, it seems to me, happen to be Sony. I hate to say it, and it hurts to say it, but Sony's DVD players and stuff like that generally seem to be of the highest quality. If you crack open all the cases, take a look at the hardware inside, the Sony stuff seems to be just that little bit better. Now, that said, though, I feel bad about giving Sony my money because I don't agree with a lot of their policies regarding intellectual property. But, you know, hey, they do make some good kick. So, you know, do with that what you want. I won't lie to you. Now, into Cyberpunk Kit. How about an Argon Combat wearable computer? Now, this got sent to me by Wyandi. Now, wearable computers are something that I think is very, very sexy. And as we've stated before, the major holdback on these things is the display. It's the optical interface to get your wearable to work. Now, if I had about an extra $6,000 kicking around, I'd probably be able to crank myself out one of these things. But, you know, bang for the buck. It's just not there yet to be practical for the everyday person. Now, of course, I could always get PC 104 boards and build my own wearable and then put it on patrolling and show everybody how to do it, where to get the parts, how to throw it all together so that you, too, could build your own, you know, DIY kit wearable. complete with yours truly doing the instruction. And when that is feasible, and when I can actually make that happen with a display and put one together for, say, less than $1,000, then perhaps we will look at that. But until that point, we still are looking at these really slick production models that are out there, one of which from Argonne. Now, check it out. Designed to fit in a pocket or pouch. Now, this thing is really, really slick. It's very hardened. Of an infantry soldier, the wearable PC is light and compact, weighing just 1.25 pounds. Integration with chest or helmet-mounted displays provides a soldier access to powerful computer systems without interfering with his or her duties, making this product a very powerful tool for today's military. The wearable computer is not a PDA, but a fully functional x86-based military computer with 1 GHz processor and 512 megs of SD RAM, giving plenty of power for running either Windows or Linux applications. It utilizes a solid-state flash hard drive with up to 8 gigs of internal storage. That means there's no spinning disks. Solid-state 8-gig drive. That's pretty hot. A wearable PC has a built-in 10-100 Ethernet and capability of connecting external devices via, so you can connect to it with RS-422, RS-232, and USB 1.1 ports. So it's got USB, even though it's not the new stuff, but it is USB. It can be customized with additional features including video capture, wow, cool, audio, GPS, modem, FireWire, USB 2, and more. So I guess you got your base model, and then the company charges you an arm and a leg to get all the new high-speed, low-drag stuff on there. That's pretty cool. And the fact is, since it's the solid-state hard drive, that's the thing that kicks ass. So that's the sort of that's the venue we're going towards with the wearable, because as we're running around, living life, taking buses, doing whatever, falling over, you know, getting drunk, thrown out of bars, you don't want your computer to get all shit-kicked in the mix. That's just me, because, you know, there's nothing worse than having your kit break on you, other than perhaps having your kit stolen on you. In mercenary news, in a wonderful chunk of Merc news, and this got said to be by Thunderspud, the U.S. military said yesterday is investigating a shooting incident near Fallujah last month that led to 19 private security contractors, including 16 Americans, being detained by Marines. Now, I touched on a similar story here where there was some shooting, but apparently there has been arrests in this. I'm not even sure if this is the same story or if this is yet another private contractor group involved, because there's so many over there. U.S. Marines said the contractors were held for 3 days after firing on Iraqis and Marines in western Iraq. Aha. So it's a different one, because the one before I reported on was just on the Marines. But these guys apparently were firing on Iraqis and Marines. The military said no casualties were called. Several thousand U.S. Marines are based in Fallujah, a tent city 65 kilometers west of Baghdad that was long linked with Iraqi's raging insurgency and was the last and was the scene of a major U.S.-led offensive in November. The circumstances surrounding last month's shooting involved 16 American security contractors and 3 Iraqis. The circumstances surrounding that are unclear. They were detained on May 28th after Iraqi civilians and U.S. Marines were fired at in separate incidents over a three-hour period. U.S. Marines released the contractors on May 31st. 19 employees working for a contract security firm in Iraq were temporarily detained and questioned after firing on U.S. Marines positioned in the city of Fallujah on Saturday, according to Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dave LaPan. So, what we have here is we have yet another example of PMCs, private military companies, sending their mercenaries overseas, and they don't give a fuck because they're just there. They're looking after the other guys on their squad. And if the Marines happen to get in the way and there's Iraqis in the way, they're just going to throw fire down. You got to understand, too, these private military contractors are using state-of-the-art bang-bang, and they're all ex-military, okay? So you've got to wonder, what are they doing there? Why are these companies allowed to bring in hired killers? Because that is exactly what they are. It's core political muscle. And they're like, well, blah, 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 blah. There's no role for the private mercenary in an armed conflict. If this isn't war, what are mercenaries doing there? What are the mercenaries doing? What about these companies that are hiring these mercenaries? I mean, there's a certain amount of accountability that has to be dealt out to the mercenaries. Don't get me wrong. But who the hell are they working for? Who paid these gunmen to go wandering around in the desert? Well, obviously, the big companies did, right? So, you know, shouldn't there be some accountability going back to those big companies? I would say so. But, of course, we'll never see that because, you know, the big companies have all got their lawyers up there and everybody's all good like that. And it's never going to come down the pipe. It'll never come down the pipe. In ID theft news, also from Thunderspud. Now, of course, you know that MasterCard, it's all over the web. That MasterCard lost 40 million credit card numbers. Holy crap. More than the population of Canada. 40 million credit cards were stolen. And now they're talking about how there's a number of different stories where they're saying that there was 13.9 million they lost before that. So actually, it should probably be about 53 million. And MasterCard came up with this story saying credit card users shouldn't fret. Only a small fraction of the 13.9 million credit cards accounts on MasterCard exposed to possible fraud were considered high risk, the company said Saturday. Well, is it 40 million? Is it 14 million? Is it 13.9 million? What's the number here? I think we should summon some records. MasterCard International Incorporated spokeswoman Jessica Antle said only about 68,000, only 68,000 of its cardholders are at higher levels of risk. And while those 68,000 should closely examine their credit or debit accounts, customers do not have to worry about identity theft. No, none at all, Antle said. Social security numbers, dates of birth, information like that are not stored on your credit card. No, neither is your DNA. But it's all on the credit card with the credit card number, isn't it? I mean, if you got the credit card number, that's what they're really after here. MasterCard announced the breach Friday and said it was traced to an Atlanta-based card system solution incorporated, which processes credit card and other payments for banks and merchants. The incident appears to be the largest yet involving financial data in a series of security breaches affecting valuable customer data at a major financial institutions and data brokers. Well, this is a story talking about 13 million. I guess that 40 million. Only about the 13.9 million of the 40 million credit cards accounts may have been exposed to fraud were MasterCard accounts. It was not immediately clear how many other accounts were considered high risk. Well, okay, so 13.9 million of them were MasterCards, but they won't even say if there was American Express, is it Diners Club, is it Visa, what the fuck? So MasterCard's coming out saying, oh, okay, close to, you know, I'd say 15%. Well, not even 15, 13 or 40, I don't know what the percentage is. That's a lot of fucking cards, okay? Like, a lot. Okay, more, almost, well, shy of half, maybe a quarter, is that a quarter? 13, 40, yeah, about a quarter. A little bit over a quarter, maybe. Yeah, a little bit over a quarter of 40 million were MasterCards, and they're saying they're all at high risk. So, well, how many other cards are processed? I'd say there's at least four. So if MasterCard's trying to downplay this by saying, oh, all of our cards were, and all of our cards are high risk, but we're not going to say, you know, see how they did that? See how they did that? They're just talking about MasterCard. They're not talking about Visa. So all the 40 million cards could be high risk. But this is what they call very careful damage control, where they're not lying, but they are lying. It's called a lie of omission. And yet they try to get everyone to, you know, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal, la, 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 keep spending money, it's all okay, don't try to make us not pay for stuff that you charge up on accounts, because, you know, if they use your credit card, you still have to pay for it, la, la, la. Under federal law, credit card holders are liable for no more than $50 of unauthorized charges. Some card issuers, including MasterCard, offer zero liability to customers on unauthorized use of the card. Well, isn't that interesting? Maybe there's time for us to start switching to credit card carriers who offer liability in case they can't keep their data to themselves. Because from this notion, if you have to pay for what somebody else puts on the card, what's to start MasterCard from just going out ordering a bunch of stuff and enslaving you? No product ever changes hands. They just say, oh, someone stole your card and, you know, went and racked it up, and now you owe us money. Is that paranoid? Maybe. Is that beyond the core political veil? Absolutely not. That's exactly the kind of stuff they'd want to do. In InfoWar news, this got sent to me from the Boon. Now, remember I said I was going to have a story about Sony? Well, I do. Here it is. Sony BMG, the world's second largest music company, is rolling out CDs with a new technology that serves as a quote-unquote speed bump to hinder people who want to make illicit copies. Okay, it's not a speed bump. They're putting out ice. Users will be allowed to make three additional CDs copies of their own and store music files on their computers and protect them in a protected format from Microsoft. Okay, there we go. Sony's BMG new copy protection effort comes with at least one downside. PC users are unable to transfer the songs to Apple's popular iPod portable computer music player because Apple has declined to make its software compatible with Microsoft Windows Media Digital Rights Management, DRM system. So what we got here is you buy a Sony CD, you want to listen to it on your iPod, and you can't because these companies can't get their shit together. Furthermore, you can't make other backups beyond three because, you know, everybody's all terrified and your music isn't really even your music. You're just licensing music now. The copy protection technology is far from ironclad. Apple Macintosh users currently face no restrictions at all. What's more, if users go to a website and complain about the lack of iPod compatibility, Sony BMG will send them an email with a backdoor measure about how to work around the copy protection. So they tell you how to hack it if you send them a letter. Let me read that again. If users go to a website, I don't know what website it is, I'm sure it'll get posted in my live journal, and complain about the lack of iPod compatibility, Sony will send them an email with a backdoor measure about how to get around their own copy protection. What the hell? A UK firm called First for Internet, which created the technology, said the primary goal is not to prevent copies of the songs from ending up in a illicit peer-to-peer network. The primary goal is not to prevent copies of songs from ending up on illicit peer-to-peer file trading networks, which the industry blames for millions of dollars in lost sales. Instead, it aims to dissuade people from burning unlimited CD copies, is what is sometimes called schoolyard piracy. Wow. This technology is a speed bump. It's trying to dissuade the average consumer from making as many copies as they like, said First for Internet chief executive Matthew Gillette Smith. Now, you're trying to, quote, you're not going to stop tracks getting on P2P sites, he added. It's designed to stop casual piracy. It's not saying you'll stop people from doing it, but it makes people stop and think. Okay, this guy is going to be out of business pretty quick, I would say, because this technology here seems like a big waste of time. Not only that, like, hasn't anybody thought this through? Realistically, if it's so easy to get around, you know, why are you even bothering to do it? This is like a huge waste of money. But this is what they do. So if you buy yourself a Sony BMG disc and you're having problems getting it on your iPod, now you know why. That's why I even bothered reporting this. People are like, why are you reporting on this, man? This is retarded. Well, because chances are you may have picked up a CD made by Sony. You want to drop it on your iPod. Now you know you got to go to that website, send them a letter, and they'll tell you how to get around it. I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff online about how to get around that anyway. But it's these guys over there who've got this little speed bump. Aren't you cute with your speed bump? You speed bump, you. Why don't you go be a speed bump on the highway? In Mad Cow News. Now, this got sent to me by Pig Monkey. American cattle are eating chicken litter. Chicken litter. I don't even want to think about this. Let me get through this. American cattle are eating chicken litter, cattle blood, and restaurant leftovers that could help transmit mad cow disease, a gap in the U.S. defense that the Bush administration promised to close nearly 18 months ago. Once the cameras were turned off and the media coverage dissipated, then it's been business as usual. No real reform. Just keep feeding slaughterhouse waste, said John Stover, an activist and co-author of Mad Cow USA. Could the nightmare happen here? He contended the entire U.S. policy is designed to protect the livestock industry's access to slaughterhouse waste as cheap feed. Now, obviously, feeding cows is a bad idea because we've determined it turns these wonderful prions up in their heads, which kills everyone and creates essentially what Alzheimer's is. And there's a lot of people who believe that Alzheimer's is actually just mad cow disease, and there's a lot of talk going on about that. You might want to ask why a lot of doctors are afraid to do autopsies on people with mad cow or people who they think have died of Alzheimer's because they have to burn all their medical instruments after they're done because the prions are so nasty, you just can't kill them. Now, he contended the entire U.S. policy is designed to protect the livestock industry's access to slaughterhouse waste as cheap feed. Well, obviously, it's another prime example of the core political influence. The government is now investigating other possible causes of mad cow disease in the United States. Yeah, look over here. The beef cow has been tested and declared free of diseases last November, but new tests came up positive at a laboratory in England is conducting more tests. The Food and Drug Administration promised to tighten feed rules shortly after the first case of mad cow disease was confirmed in the U.S. in a Washington state cow in December of 2003. Today we are bolstering our BSE firewalls to protect the public, Mark McLean, the FDA commissioner, said on January 26, 2004. FDA said it would ban blood, poultry litter, and restaurant plate waste from cattle feed and require feed mills to use separate equipment to make cattle feed. Chicken litter is ground cover for the birds. Chicken litter is ground cover for the birds that absorbs manure, it's spilled feed, and feathers. So essentially it's like, well, it's chicken litter is what it is. However, in July, the FDA scrapped those restrictions. I see. McLean's replacement, Lester Crawford, said the international team of experts assembled in the agricultural department was calling for even stronger rules, and the FDA would produce new restrictions in line with those recommendations. Today, the FDA has still not done what it has promised to do. The agency declined interviews, saying in a statement that there was no timeline for the new restrictions. Well, obviously, since there's no timeline, the timeline's never going to happen. And you wonder why I push being a vegetarian on this show. People talk about, you know, why do you, like, it's not about being a vegetarian, it's about not eating poo, is what it is. It's about not eating food that will kill you. Because it seems to me that America is trying like hell to kill all its Americans. They're trying to kill them in wars, they're trying to kill them with disease, they're trying to kill them with mad cow, they're trying to kill them with the food, they're trying to kill them with every possible means they can, because I guess we're worried about population or something. Because for some reason, We're just trying to kill everyone who doesn't have the money to afford macrobiotic chefs. I guess, is that the goal here? Because quite obviously, it seems that all the meat is getting worse and worse for you. I mean, McDonald's is practically death mail. You know, you walk in there and you're taking this food. I mean, how much damage are you doing, realistically, biting a cheeseburger? I mean, a lot of it is rainforest beef, you know? And if it's not rainforest beef, then Jesus, you're probably getting beef that's been totally infected with brain-eating prions that, incidentally, mad cow disease will sit dormant in your body for like 20 years. This shit will just sit there, hang out in your system for 20 years, and then one day, bang, it hits you. And of course, the overwhelming urge is to say, ah, well, so what? We all gotta die sometime. Well, that's really cool. But we'll see if you sing that tune a little bit later on in life. We'll see how you sing that tune when you actually do get mad cow disease and you start having weird emotional swings and you can't remember things like not just where you park, but where you live. Let's see if how you're dealing with it then. I say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, okay? So get with the program. If you don't give a shit about yourself, that's fine, all right? But don't try to just slough it off, say, oh, well, we're all dying, and try to take other people down with you. There's a reason why people can eat healthy, and the reason why is so you can live longer. We have to outlive our enemies. We have to outlive these crazy times we're living in. So pay attention to your body. It's important. It's the only one you got. Now, in wet wiring news, and this is from Skyburst. Now, this is from June 5th, a little while back. But this is some pretty scary brain interfacing stuff. Listen to this one here. A mouse can understand human speech. Recently, this was sent to me by Skyburst, it was observed that at a robot engineering technology research center in Shandong University of Science and Technology that five mice with a micro electrodes implanted in their heads obeyed the computer-generated commands of the research staff, correctly completing commands to, in succession, turn left, turn right, move forward. Animal robots, also known as robotic animals or intelligent animals. Okay, that's I find that offensive personally. Most animals are intelligent, but controlling them with running wires into things' heads to control them, that's like super creepy. Are animals. These intelligent animals, end quote, are animals whose nervous systems are controlled by human electronic signals, turning them into robotic animals. How about cybernetic slaves? Shandong University's completed this series of experiments using the computer to generate a set of rhythmic electronic signal codes that were then transmitted to the mice brain through implanted electrodes to reach certain neural networks that have specialized functions, making the white mice realize turn left, turn right, and move and march forward movements under the control of this neural network. Project manager and mad scientist Suzhang Cheng said the animal robot research is the intersection and merger of an electronic communication and biology, creating a new scientific discipline. Yeah, what's the name of that scientific discipline? It's called slavery. Following the maturation of this research product, human electronic signals will be lifelike enough to actually or basically resemble signals generated by the body and the brain. At that time, putting computer chip implants inside animals will replace certain neurons of animals in controlling certain behavior or replace certain human damaged nerves to help the disabled recover. Now, this is very cool. It can be very cool because, you know, obviously, the guy gets, you know, in a car accident, splits his head open, cuts out a chunk of his brain and enables him to walk. Well, now all we got to do is drop in this chip, boot-doo-dee-doo, and suddenly he's back to being an Olympic athlete again. Well, I think that's hot. What I am concerned about is doing this to criminals, because if you could, like, install chips in people's heads that take away individual free will and you can then control them through neural networks to work or pick up things or work harder or whatever, well, you see what we got here. We've got robotic slavery. So this is a technology that could be used very, very good, or it's a technology that could be used very, very bad. And you can bank that when I get a hold of After Now, I'm going to be talking about this stuff in there. Now, how about some more cyberpunk kit? Now, this one here was sent to me by No Delete. It's called Stealth Switch. Now, when you first look at it, you'll think that it's, you know, well, what's the point of this? It's just like, you know, popping over. But it's actually, if you think about it, it's very hard to catch, and it's a pretty neat little device. The Stealth Switch is described as the world's first desktop cloaking device. Well, that's pretty puffy in PR, but whatever. It is basically a computer privacy product. It happens thousands of times a day. Someone comes into your office or cubicle, home office, etc., and stares or squints at your computer screen to see what you are doing. But that was before the Stealth Switch. You have a limited number of options. Minimize your open windows as fast as possible. Turn off your monitor. Hit the Control-Alt-Delete. Ask your visitor to leave, etc. After 2.5 years of research and development, the patent-pending stealth switch solves this common problem. That's true, because if they come in and you turn off the monitor, that means you were doing something you weren't supposed to be doing, or you're doing something that you don't want them to see. Now all you have to do is press the stealth switch foot switch, and discreetly hidden under your desk, and the windows that you want to hide vanish instantly. Press the foot switch again, and they reappear exactly as they were before. So it's a way to jump out and jump back on again. I thought this was kind of dumb. I thought, well, you know, you get around it, but I'd like to see how strong it really is. Like, how quick does it actually happen? Because part of doing something that you shouldn't be doing at work, well, if you can hide it without knowing, like, without anyone seeing that you're actually doing something wrong, if you do something obvious like minimize a window, then you're screwed. But if you pretend like you don't know the guy's there and you got one of those ThinkGeek mirrors up and you can monitor, you got a little alerter that'll tell people when people are coming in your cubicle, all this is to gain more privacy. So what the hell? There's probably a few ways you can make your own hack, but it's a neat concept, and that's why it made the show. Now let's get into some Mudhut religion here from Dead Code. Dead Code sent this in. A Romanian nun has died after being bound to a cross, gagged, and left alone for 3 days in a cold room in a convent, Romanian police have said. Members of the convent in northeast Romania claim that Marcia Irina Corinsina was possessed, and that the crucifixion had been part of an exorcism ritual. So, yet more people going, it's demons! We must exorcise the demons! And of course, they kill her. Cornici was found dead on the cross on Wednesday after fellow nuns called an ambulance. Oh, what, you didn't just pray over her? A priest and four nuns were charged with imprisonment leading to death. Yeah, I should say so. The police said the 23-year-old nun, how young is that? That's way too young, man. Who was denied food and drink throughout her ordeal, has been tied and chained to the cross and a towel pushed into her mouth to smother any sounds. Jesus. A post-mortem is to be carried out, although initial reports claim that Corinsini has died from asphyxiation. This is the joy that religion brings. Okay, this is why I am not such a big fan of the whole religion thing. People wonder, what's your problem with religion, Sean? You want to know my problem with religion? That's my problem right there. In England, they're cutting up kids, and they're suffocating nuns over in Romania. So, you know, you can take from that what you want. Now, I got some more cyberpunk kid here. This is a great one sent by the Boon about booster bags. You know, the RFID tags and all that good stuff? Check this out. This is from the article. It was a repost from an earlier one, but this is an interesting device. A reader named Bob clued me into this interesting bit of news. Today I was covering a story about people lining their heads or even their phones with aluminum foil to protect themselves from what they feel is extreme radio wave radiation, also called electrosmog. The question I pose is, are they crazy or just picking up on the waves that you and I cannot feel? And they have a link there to discuss about it. It turns out that foil is also used in a device called a booster bag that lets shoplifters walk out of a store undetected with tons of clothing, DVDs, and other merchandise. Because the foil essentially foils the anti-theft scanners at the store's entrance. The scanner cannot read the anti-theft tags, and the thief walks out without a beep. Very cool idea. Professional shoplifters have discovered a major weakness in conventional security systems. Bags and clothes lined with layers of tinfoil could hide magnetic security tags from antennas designed to detect them. Popularly called booster bags by an industry specialist, these bags just take minutes to make and have rapidly become the tool of choice for shoplifters the world over. Booster bags provide shoplifters with enormous advantages because they can contain large quantities of merchandise, they can look natural in a shopping environment, security tagged items inside cannot be detected by conventional RF, AM, or EM systems, they leave no evidence at the crime. Today you'll find stories in newspapers the world over about how 42 DVDs or 17 Armani shirts, or 30 bottles of expensive perfume have been found in a single booster bag. Found because the security guard or a shop assistant discovered the theft by chance. The stories appear despite the fact most stores don't like this kind of publicity since it encouraged some other petty thief to visit them with a tinfoil-lined booster bag. Now, this is something to think about when it comes to the RFID bags. I mean, because if you could line, say, your backpack or your AWOL bag with tinfoil, I guess they won't be able to scan into it, will they? You can do it that what you want. Now, let's get on to some human guinea pig news. Now, this was sent to me by Visage, and this is one of the most outrageous stories, definitely the most outrageous story of the day. Never mind the choke to death nun. Never mind that one, okay? This one here has really got the cake. This one just gets my ire up. You ready for this one here? Human guinea pig news from Visage. The Department of Health and Human Services offer The Department of Health and Human Services Office of Human Research Protections investigating the clinical trials of on. Okay, so they're doing clinical trials on Black and Hispanic orphans in New York's Incarceration Children's Center. Incarnation Children's Center, not incarceration, bit of a slip of the tongue there, has found the National Institute of Health and Columbia Presbyterian Hospital acted unethically. So we got the National Institute of Health and the Columbia Presbyterian Hospital doing medical tests on Black and Hispanic orphans in New York. The Associated Press reported on Thursday, June 16th, the government has concluded at least some AIDS drug experiments involving foster children violated federal rules to ensure vulnerable youths were protected from the risks of medical research. Okay, medical research on your orphans, America. ICC began testing drugs on its orphan population in 1992, the same year they became a subsidiary of Columbia University's Pediatric AIDS Clinical Trial Unit under Dr. Ann Gershon. Dr. Ann Gershon is a piece of shit. The trials were implemented and overseen by a committee headed by ICC by Dr. Stephen Nichols. Dr. Nichols left ICC in the late 90s, is now chief of the Department of Pediatrics at Harlan Hospital in 2003. I went undercover inside the facility, saw the effects of drugs on the children myself, and I broke the story in an article called "The House That AIDS Built" that first ran on IndieMedia.org. Now, this isn't me. This is the guy who wrote this article that I'm reading. Many of the drugs, like AZT and its analogs, were used on the ICC trials had previously been approved for use in adults, but evidence of life-threatening and fatal toxicities were found in children. So, never mind the fact. I mean, this story is wrong on so many different levels. Okay, you've got Black and Hispanic orphans having medical experimentation done on them in a hospital in New York. What happened to "Give me your unwashed and you're unwanted"? What happened to that? No, let's do medical experiments on children. Holy shit! Like, am I the only person here that would just look at this and go, you know, at what point does, like, these doctors are educated people, aren't they? Don't they have even the slightest bit of ethics to say, no, I don't think we should do medical experimentation on orphans? That's like getting, that's storybook evil going on here. That's something out of a, Jesus, that's like a Lemony Snicket novel, for Christ's sakes. Anyway, paranoia at the Piggly Wiggly, or the Piggly Wiggly. By Fat Ninja. Fat Ninja, Piggly Wiggly, Paranoia at the Piggly Wiggly. I just love that title. Paranoia at the Piggly Wiggly. Piggly Wiggly's Carolina company may have a funny name. Yes, they do. But its approach to cutting costs is all business. The Charleston SC grocery chain recently finished testing biometric scanners that allow shoppers to pay for purchases with nothing more than a fingerprint. Now it's preparing to roll out the machines at 80 of its stores. The real impetus for us is to address the rapidly increasing cost of processing electronic payments, says Rich Farrell, Vice President of Information Services at Piggly Wiggly's Carolina. A recent increase of 2 cents per debit card transaction by one electronic payment company added $40,000 in annual fees to Piggly Wiggly's account, eating into the company's already thin margins. A retailer can't refuse to take credit cards because that would put us at a competitive disadvantage. So we need to find less expensive methods of payment that are just as convenient for our customers, says Farrell. Now, this is just like, I'd rather you pay the extra $40,000 so you're not keeping my prints. The scanners, which cost about $50 a piece, work with existing point-of-sale systems and link customers' debit or credit accounts. Sit by the familiar card readers in a checkout line, and integration was, or sitting by a credit card reader in a checkout line, integration was quick and relatively simple, says Farrell. Expanding the program after the trial was an easy choice, he says. You can study this stuff to death, but the cost is not huge, and it will help us over the long term. Yes, of course it will. Of course, bear in mind also that all anyone has to do is just get the fingerprints of someone else, make a fingerprint duplication device like a sleeve that would fit over your finger like a small condom, and you'd be able to charge whatever items at the Piggly Wiggly at whoever. And you think Piggly Wiggly is really going to do a lot of research for, you know, $20 worth of fizzy pop or whatever? Chances are, no, they won't. But paranoia at the Piggly Wiggly. Daily hack today, we got two of them. We got FactNet, and that, big thanks to Mac for this. FactNet has been to the psychological coercion and mind control what Amnesty International has been to physical coercion and torture. These guys are a great link for all cult activity. So in case you run across any organization, you want to know if they're cultish or if they're evil, go check out FactNet. very, very cool. And how about some tinfoil hat Linux? Now, I'm not trying to start a Linux war, but it seems to me that this is about the most paranoid Linux out there. It started as a secure, single floppy, bootable Linux distribution for storing PGP keys and then encrypting, signing, and wiping files. At some point, it became an exercise in over-engineering. Tinfoil hat Linux is useful if you're using a computer that could have a keystroke logger installed, as an example of a tiny, cheap hardware logger. It's useful if you need to use your personal GPG key at work, school, or web hosting facility where you don't trust or own the equipment. If you maintain a PGP certificate authority or signing key and have to have a safe place to use the CA key. If you simply don't want to risk putting a PGP on your hard drive, someone else might have access to it. Or the Illuminati are watching your computer and you need to use Morse code to blink your PGP messages into the numlock key. Okay. So it's very cool to be paranoid. It's very cool to make sure that you keep security at a maximum. Why? Because that way, at least you're certain of how much security you have because you're in direct control of it. There is a balance to be struck where you shouldn't be wandering around with the tinfoil hat on all the time. But tools like Tinfoil Hat Linux may be something that you can use. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information that you need to stay alive. This has been a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Fourleaf, Alan, Druid Weissimaru, The Grey Goat, Drake, Weblife, The Grey Ghost, sorry, Drake, Weblife, Philip, Paradin, Robert, Jesse, Andrew, Michael, End User, Christopher, Noog, Derek, Joseph, Jesse, Eric, Desert Runner, Steve, Brandon, Jason, Matthew, Mainframe, Peter, Malcolm, Timor, Rosalie, Keith, Matt, Evan, Austin, David, Jonathan, Adam, Richard, Charles, Philip, Jason, Jonathan, Brandon, Host Mojo, Matt, Charles, Matthew, Lars, Eric, Dark Nature, and Brandon. And the new subscribers this month, those people who showed up to help. Thanks so much, guys. Ed, Jennifer, Palmer, Ark, Kevin, Michael, Dennis, Jesse, Matthew, and Jason. Thank you so much. And a special thanks to everyone and their assistants for gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album Girls Under Glass. That's by, the band is called Girls Under Glass. The album is called Nightmares. And I'm going to leave you now with a Raised in Black cover of a Metallica song that I'm going to send out to my buddy Angela. So check out the song Sanitarium, the Raised in Black cover. Very, very cool. I love covers that Raised in Black does. So a big shout out to Angela. And until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.